is Thursday, November 18. We're just beginning chapter 20 in digestion, absorption of lipids, and then its subsequent metabolism. Let's begin with a word of prayer today, shall we? Dear Lord, thank you so much for the faithful that come, and we ask also to be with those who can't make it because of test obligations. Be with them as they take this test, as they take that test, that they can do well in it, and they would be, their effort would be rewarded. We ask that you would be with us through the rest of this semester, and we anticipate the Sabbath coming. Help us to truly be a part of the recreation that can occur, that does occur on those 24 hours called Sabbath. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, I think we finished, we started off with this. This is, of course, lipid metabolism. There's nothing that quite satisfies like a good chunk of fat in terms of hunger. Every once in a while, I come home from church, and before I have Sabbath dinner or Sabbath lunch, my wife buys these cheese sticks, you know, string cheese, exactly. And, you know, and there's nothing that quite satisfies as a good cold piece of fat on your tongue, as it were. That sounds awful, doesn't it? But actually, it's very satisfying, as you know, because, of course, there's both hormonal and nerve stimulation that comes from eating fat. That's due directly to sensors that detect fat, and so on. So it's all really good. But how does all this work? Well, of course, we need bile salts, lipases, and colipase, other lipases, and other phospholipases. Can someone tell me what the purpose of bile salts are? Bile salts or bile acids? What are they dissolved? What are they designed for? I'm sorry, what? Emulsify the fat, and how do they behave? They behave like a detergent or soap. They literally dissolve the lipid droplets into microscopic fat nodules that are surrounded by, and it's difficult to see here, we'll see this, I think, on the next page, surrounded by phospholipids. Phospholipids, and so they create these things called micelles. So the bile salts are a naturally occurring detergent, emulsifier. And without bile salts, your digestion of fats would be greatly hindered. Matter of fact, you have a terrible time of it. And your bowel movements are extremely slippery and loose and all this kind of thing because you're not absorbing the fats. Yep. Yeah. They're based on cholesterol structure. They're actually, the bile acids have a cholesterol backbone, or actually a steroid backbone. So, interestingly enough, in the metabolism of cholesterol, the only way to eliminate cholesterol that's already been made, oddly enough, is through bile acids. There's no breakdown mechanism in your body. There's no mechanism that will metabolize cholesterol. It only can be eliminated through the feces, interestingly enough. So here you have this triacylglycerol emulsion droplet, the bile acids, colipases, other lipases. You end up then, this droplet then gets attacked by the bile salt to help it solubilize. The lipase and colipase begin to act on the triacylglycerols that are there and produce a fatty acids, and 2-monoacylglycerol. What is 2-monoacylglycerol? Well, what that means, of course, for fats, the backbone for fats, if you recall, is, of course, this compound. You know the name of this compound, don't you? What is it? This is just glycerol, or glycerin. And so 2-acylglycerol simply means that you've got a fatty acid here, right there on the second position. So the fatty acids that were a part of the first and third position are gone and made into fatty acids. They pass through the enterocyte, which is the cell that lines the lumen of the intestinal tract, And there the fates differ based on how long it is. If it's a medium chain or short chain fatty acid, it simply diffuses through and gets dumped into the lymph or capillary. The fatty acids actually get into the bloodstream. So the lymph here is actual, there's a lymph and there's a capillary, and they're two different circulatory systems. So the short chain, the medium and short chain fatty acids end up directly moving into the bloodstream, where they actually attach to albumin for transport. So albumin, the protein that's in your blood, is an important fatty acid transporter. So this fatty acid goes right here. It takes them to a variety of locations, either liver, muscle, or adipose tissue, typically. Okay. Now, the long-chain fatty acids are much more problematic because they're much less water-soluble. The body has solved that issue by repackaging them into triacylglycerol. So they take what was the monoacylglycerol and fatty acids that are long-chain, reform them as triacylglycerols in the endoplasmic reticulum, and then attach a protein tag, kind of like a UPC symbol, a protein tag to this, and dump it into the lymph node, in the lymph circulatory system. Those are called chylomicrons. Chylomicrons are called lipoproteins. That's the class of compound they are, class of structure, lipoprotein. They come from dietary sources only. You're not going to find a chylomicron that comes from endogenous fat that's being transported. So chylomicrons only comes from dietary fat. And because it comes from dietary fat and it has unique protein tags on it, it has unique fate, as we'll see in just a little bit. All right, now, there's a little bit more down here talking about that, but we'll go ahead and finish this up. I'm going to go through here and illustrate all this. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to pause and highlight the areas or things you're supposed to write in. The first blank you're supposed to write in is the word medium up there at the top. Typically 6 to 10 carbons long. Then on the next blank is you fill in with an FABP. FABP. The third blank you put in apolipoproteins. Apolipoproteins. And let's see here. The fourth blank is called a chylomicron. Chylomicron. C-H-Y-L-O-M-I-C-R-O-N. The next blank you fill in with micelles. Micelles. Micelle, my bell. Da, da, da. Then you have unstirred aqueous boundary layer. Unstirred aqueous. Put in the word aqueous there, please. And the last is thoracic duct or thoracic. What we're going to do now is since you filled that in, let's take a look and see if we can discuss what's on this page in a rational way. Let's actually start at the bottom because that's where we just finished off on the previous page. We were talking about micelles as a medium for transporting fat and fatty acids. We have this triacylglycerol, these TGs, in oil phase. These are microscopic oil droplets. Gastric lipase or a pancreatic lipase then begins to act on this. Of course, you have the cobolipase as well. That you're making fatty acids, diglycerides, and monoglycerides. So the fatty acids, DGs and MGs, those stand for fatty acids, diglycerides, and monoglycerides. You then have these emulsion droplets that then are attacked or attached to or which bile salts accumulate around. And you now create these mixed micelles, mixed because they have a variety of sizes. They turn out to be fairly flat, pancake-like, disc-like, in which the there's a phospholipid layer around the outside edge that keeps it water-soluble. So these mixed micelles are highly water-soluble. And that's an important characteristic because, of course, fatty acids are not particularly water-soluble. And without that, they have difficulty moving across something that we're going to talk about here. All right, now we're going to go back up to the top, and we're going to look at what happens with fatty acids depending on the size. If they're medium chain, they pass through the cell unmodified and move to the blood and onto the liver. All right? That's what the diagram on the previous page described. Is that correct? Would you agree with that? Yeah. Then looking at B, the previous, again, this is dealing with the previous diagram. That's what the previous means. The long-chain fatty acids become bound to a protein that's inside the cell called intestinal fatty acid binding protein, or IFABP. So it is those fatty acids are so insoluble, they have difficulty maintaining the solubility in sufficient quantities to make something happen inside the cell. So they get attached to this fatty acid binding protein, which helps transport them. But it doesn't transport them directly to the blood. It transports them to the ER, which is not shown in the previous diagram. And there they reform the triglycerides and package in a class of materials called apolipoproteins. And if the triglycerides come from dietary sources, the apolipoprotein is called chylomicron. Chylomicron. Now, what I need for you to do, ladies and gentlemen, is the chylomicron has a protein tag to it. And what I need for you to do is, I believe, eliminate the A there. Because once there's a protein tag to it, it becomes a lipoprotein. But anyway, we'll see what's going on here. Now, all right, apolipoprotein. The chylomicron is transported to the lymph system, which is eventually dumped in large body veins via the thoracic duct. So these chylomicrons, these lipoproteins, are in fact not transported directly to the blood cell, to the bloodstream, as in the short or medium chain fatty acids, but are packaged and then put in the lymph system, where they're eventually moved into a thoracic duct where there's lots and lots of blood flow to help dissolve these chylomicrons that are coming out. And so the lymph system, which does not have a pump, needs to have movement of major muscle tissue in order to have the lymph system move. It's one of the reasons why exercise is helpful for maintaining health, is because the lymph system, which is a part of the immune system, needs a pump to move the materials that are in the lymph system, and that comes from the major muscle groups. So a brisk walk on a Sabbath afternoon after a fatty meal both helps your immune system and also helps move these chylomicrons that you make. Now, the mixed micelles are highly water-soluble. And they help pass through something known as an uncertain aqueous boundary layer. As you know, you've got the cell here, the enterocyte, and this cell has lots of cilii or villi. And these villi have microvilli. Okay? Very, very large surface area. But because of the unique bulk characteristics of water, there is a thin film of water right adjacent to the microvilli that is not particularly stirred by the movement or compression of the smooth muscles that surround the gut. So these smooth muscles are constantly moving the intestinal tract, but there's this aqueous boundary layer, and they call it unstirred because it's a very thin film. And because of the thinness of it and because of the polar nature of the microvilli and so on, it doesn't particularly get stirred, as it were, with the smooth muscle movement. Without these micelles right here, the oil droplets would have a very hard time passing through that unstirred aqueous boundary layer. And so you would have a terrible time absorbing fatty acids and fats. So the mixed micelles help move fats across that unstirred aqueous boundary layer. All right, to the intestinal wall. What? Please.
How about those diet pills where if you eat a certain amount of fat, like, you, like, I don't know, get really sick? Like, does it mess with that, or do you mess with that?
Do you know what kind, what do you know what the symptoms of the illness are?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And if you eat too much fat or something, there's like side effects. Like if you go to the bathroom, there'll be like a fatty layer.
Ah, excellent. Okay, so what is... Excellent. So I have not heard about... I've seen the ads for Ally. I did not realize its mechanism of action. Apparently, it blocks fatty fat absorption. Yeah. Well, of course, blocking fat absorption would cut down a huge amount of calorie intake. Is that correct? But what do you do with that fat? You've eaten it. It's inside you, or at least in your intestinal tract. And so it just sits there. And since it's a fat, the bacteria don't particularly... I mean, they will metabolize it, but they don't metabolize it that quickly. It takes lots of oxygen to metabolize fat. And so... It just sits there, and you end up then have very slick bowel movements because of all the oil. And so it just kind of, you have a pseudo diarrhea kind of a thing. If you've taken Ally, I guess, and then had like a large fatty meal. Sure. Mm-hmm. And that'll vary between individuals. There was for a time, there was a fat substitute they were using in potato chips and stuff like that. What was the name of that? I don't remember anyway. And if you took too much of that, you ended up having a very loose bowels. The issue, the side effect actually is that it becomes, your bowel movement all becomes almost uncontrollable. That if you laugh, Or you sit up, you have a small amount of leakage, as they say, into your underwear. So it can be a real problem doing that. All right, so let's quickly run through this and find out what we're doing here. Okay, now, so on this page there are four or five blanks to fill in. The first blank is lipoprotein lipase. That's near the top. The next blank is intercellular fluid or intercellular material. The next is liver, third one down. Liver. The next one is bile salts. The next is VLDLs. And the last on the page is at the bottom. The blank is HDLs. All right, so do we have all that filled in? All right, well, let's talk about it now. So again, microns, this is called exogenous lipids. When you see the term exogenous lipids, this is diet. It's coming from your diet. Move to the capillaries and peripheral tissues. So your capillaries of your blood, of your muscle, capillary of your adipose tissue, capillaries within your liver. There you find an enzyme on the interior of the blood cell, of the blood vessel, pardon me. Literally, if you have this blood vessel going along, there is an enzyme that's sticking out into the blood flow. And that enzyme that's sticking out into the blood flow is called lipoprotein lipase, or short for LPL for short. And that lipase then begins to attack the chylomicrons as they pass by. Not sure the mechanism of it, but somehow the chylomicron is attacked or approached or approaches and it gets attacked by that lipase and releases free fatty acids into the intercellular fluid next to the muscle and adipose tissue. Then the fatty acids themselves are absorbed by the cells. That's how you get fat into the cells. Well, what happens with a chylomicron remnant? Well, most of them are absorbed by the liver. So once you have that, once you have that chylomicron value reduced, what's remnants gets absorbed by the liver. The cholesterol, the remnants, this comes from your diet. is formed into bile salts, other density lipids, degraded. Now, that is not exactly correct. It's modified, but I wouldn't necessarily call it degraded. Yes?
I have a question. What you're saying about the dietary thing, if all that fat is building up on the outside of the cell, and you're doing something like in the mitochondria, when you synthesize those fats from the citrate,
right.
Will they just stay inside the cell because there's so much fat on the outside? Would you have problems?
Well, now, you mentioned the ally.
Yeah.
The ally is not acting. This is all this right here is occurring within the body. The ally effect is acting on the intestinal tract itself and preventing the fats and fatty acids from even being absorbed into the body. So what you're going to find here is that based on your question, if there are excess, shall we say, if there are large amounts of fatty acids in the bloodstream, your hormone, your hormones, the insulin glucagon level will be altered by the pancreas sensing that, and will send signals to the various tissues, like the adipose tissue and like the muscle tissue, to begin to resynthesize that fatty acids into fats and get them stored. Okay, so you will have a process in which the cells are told, at least the ones that do this, bring in the fatty acids and begin storing them. Okay, so how do we know that muscle tissue stores fat? Well, how many of you eat beef? How many of you have, when you eat a good steak, noticed that there is marbling of the fat, okay, in there? Well, in the same way, humans have that sort of marbling. We have a tendency to carry our fat on the outside of our muscle tissue. But for me, for example, you know, I'm old and I haven't been exercising very well. And while my body shape appears to be, you know, reasonably fit, if you did a cross section of the major muscle groups, if you just of my thigh right here, boom, and you looked at it, you'd probably see fat striations in the muscle tissue that comes from that, from not having sufficient, you know, having too high a percentage body weight in fat. And then I've also men carry it around the outside, you know, in their gut. I have a lot of fat in my gut right here, surrounding my inside the peritoneal tissue, surrounding literally my intestinal tract. Okay, and then I've got a fat along underneath my skin here, and along my back. So I carry it well, but I mean, do I look particularly overweight? No, but I am about 20 pounds overweight, really. And so if you would see me lose 20 pounds, which I have before and I need to do again, you'd see my face thin out a little bit. Okay. And then my neck would shrink a little bit, and certainly the gut, the amount of fat solid in my gut would certainly decrease significantly. Okay, now then, there's endogenous lipids in here called VLDLs, IDLs, LDLs, and HDLs. Can someone tell me what that might mean? Intermediate density, low density, and high density. That's correct. So the VLDLs are produced by the liver, transported to the peripheral tissues, with those endogenous lipids having the same fate as the chylomicron. The loss of the lipid of the VLDLs creates the IDLs through the action of LPL. Now, just because that's lowercase and this is uppercase, it's the same thing. Produces LDLs. The LDLs are absorbed by extrahepatic tissues and macrophages. That's not shown. But HDLs are synthesized by the intestines and liver and other extrahepatic tissues. Let's take a look at what these lipoproteins are. The apolipoprotein is actually the protein of the lipoprotein. The lipoprotein consists of the fat and the protein. The protein itself is called the apolipoprotein. This apolipoprotein, you know, is embedded in this micelle. You can see it's got some fatty acid, I mean some phosphoesters on the surface, and then fats, cholesterol in the interior. And that's what carries all the fat that's in your system. And this this protein that's packaged around that lipoprotein is the UPC signal. It's kind of like what you find when the UPS man comes along and has a package and points his box at it and goes, and it reads a code. Well, this is the code that tells it where it's supposed to go or where it's been from, been to, been where it's been and where it's going. Now, this diagram, now there's nothing to write down here. This is taken directly from your text. Yes. Yes. Right.
I've heard that belly fat is one of the worst kinds.
Correct.
Why is that?
Well, the exact nature of that I'm not sure of. What they're saying is when they do a statistical analysis of waist of the size of the waist and the propensity for heart attacks for men, especially men who have large amounts of fat in their gut, have a statistically significant higher chance of heart attacks. Now, why that is, I don't know. Right, it is hard to burn. Yeah. I've had to overeat probably for 6 or 8 months, maybe a year, to gain this much weight. Okay. So it takes, it's very easy to do because the body absorbs absolutely all the calories that you eat. It doesn't go, oh, you're 200 pounds, I'm going to stop absorbing calories. If it did that, nobody would be overweight or nobody would be malignantly obese, as it were. Let's take a look at what's going on here now. So here's the here's you've dietary fat. Oh, there's a big blob of lasagna coming down. It's a stomach, gets acted upon, gets made into these large lipid droplets. The bile salts from the bile acids, bile salts from the gallbladder dump into the small intestine or duodenum and create these micelles. These micelles, of course, are being attacked by what? The micelles are being attacked by the lipase and along with its colipase, and these E's, which represent the triacylglycerols, are being broken down into fatty acids and glycerol. They move through the unstirred aqueous boundary layer into the epithelial tissue, where they're reformed, notice, and repackaged as chylomicrons and dumped into the intestinal lymph system. Now, this is assuming these fatty acid chains are long, not short. The chylomicron then eventually gets dumped into a large blood vessel where it moves throughout the body, where the phospholipoprotein lipase, or that lipase, begins to break down the esters, and the adipose tissue then begins to gain fatty acids. The muscle tissue begins to gain fatty acids. And you have these remnants, the cholesterol-rich chylomicron remnants. You have these IDLs, LDLs, and these materials that are remnants of cholesterol-rich chylomicron remnants or the VLDLs that are produced by the liver. The HDL is not actually produced by the liver. It's produced in extrahepatic cells. It has a very, very low relationship, very, very low ratio of fat to protein. So there's not much fat in those HDLs. That's why they're called high density. And so you can see that there is, in fact, a very sophisticated and complicated series of pathways and fates for all these different kinds of lipoproteins that carry fat. One of the most unhappy classes I took in graduate school dealt at length about the fates of these lipoproteins. I say unhappy because it was a complete and utter chaotic situation. Nobody knew exactly where anything was going, but they had to teach us something. So they had these things going up here, and these going up here, and these going back here, and this comes back here, and that goes over there, and this comes back here. Except when you're, and then it goes this over here, and then if you're overweight, then this says, it was just, Mind-boggling. Kind of like glycol. Yes, there's a question. Yes. Yeah, I know. It's an odd... this comment that I have right here. What I'd like for you to do is... When I looked at it, writing it in there, I'm going, what did I mean? Now, was it... Oh, yeah. Okay, just... Not only the extrahepatic tubes. So HDLs are, in fact, the extrahepatic tissue shown includes the intestine, and there's actually some synthesized by the liver, but it's primarily in the extrahepatic tissues. Okay? All right. So now what do I ask? What do I want you to know of this? What do I need for you to know of this? Well, I mean, this is... I need for you to be able to follow along a fate of a fatty... of a fat molecule as it enters a stomach or a small intestine, gets packaged in mice cells, gets broken down by the lipase, the fatty acids. This is long chain I'm talking about. Go into the cell, get repackaged chylomicrons, get dumped in the lymph, get dumped in the blood tissue. The blood has lipases that remove the fatty acids from that. Those fatty acids are absorbed by the cells of the muscle tissue or adipose tissue, and the chylomicron remnants are absorbed by the liver. And the HDLs come from extrahepatic tissue. The VLDLs, IDLs, and LDLs come from the liver and remnants of endogenous lipoproteins. The IDLs come from the liver or go to the liver or interrelate with the liver. Honestly, I don't want to say too much because it's probably wrong. I mean, even this diagram here probably is not, they've got like a 51% confidence level in this diagram. Okay? It really is extremely complicated, and it really is difficult to tell where things come from and things go to. Okay, because they can measure what an intermediate... They have defined what an IDL is, but when you see a chart, you'll discover that the IDL has a variety of proteins attached to it. So where do those proteins all come from? Where have they been? Okay, so I'm at best wanting you to have a general idea of what happens to the fat that's absorbed, where it goes to, what carries it. But I'll tell you. Any rate, maybe if you take a nutrition class in graduate school, they'll have it all straightened out for you. But I kind of doubt it. So here you go. So here's the characteristics taken from text. Taken from your text. Chylomicrons. Of course, you can classify chylomicrons in a separate category. It doesn't look like this, but these chylomicrons exclusively come from the diet. These others come from in sources within your body. I want you to note a couple things. We were talking about how complicated things were. I'd like for you to look at the protein tags that they have down here. Okay? You can see there's a protein tag they arbitrarily named A1, A2, B48, C1, C2, C3E, B100. You get the idea here. They are repeated sometimes. They skip a section. I mean, the LDL is exclusively B100. But you can have an IDL that has a B100 or a VLDL that has a B100 tag on it. What does all that mean? Where does it come from? Where does it go to? All right, so let's take a look at the extremities. The chylomicrons are dietary, and we know they come from the intestinal tract. The three middle ones, VLDLs, IDLs, and LDLs, originate within the body or are remnants from lipoproteins that originated in the body. Primarily from the liver. The HDL is another classification. This one you know as coming from extrahepatic tissues. The HDL is high-density lipoprotein, and I want you to note the amount of cholesterol or phospholipids involved in it. Let's see here. Look at that. Let's see here. Triacylglycerols. What percentage is triacylglycerols here? What is it in the chylomicron? Fat is less dense than water. That's why it floats. Fat is less dense than water. Therefore, lipoproteins that are low density have a relatively high proportion of, and lipoproteins that are high density have a relatively high proportion of protein to fat. That makes sense? So this is why HDLs are considered to be the scavengers of the bloodstream looking for free fatty acids and cholesterol. They're picked up from the extrahepatic, they're produced in extrahepatic tissue, and they circulate in the bloodstream and end up going to the liver where all the stuff they accumulate, this is the model at least, okay, where all the stuff they accumulate by passing through the bloodstream is given to the liver where it's metabolized to some degree or another. So, the ratio that they look for here is LDL to HDL. Or is it HDL to LDL? I don't remember what it is. It's one or the other. This is the lipoprotein they call the good cholesterol. And LDL is the lipoprotein they call the bad cholesterol. And they can identify these two because they do electrophoresis on their proteins after they isolate them. And they can tell the ratio of this relative to the other. And so they've done studies indicating that people who have high levels of LDL relative to HDL have a propensity for heart attacks and other cardiac issues with blood, you know, strokes and stuff. And those who have relatively high levels of HDL compared to the LDL have a lower risk. Okay, so that's why they look at the ratio. All right, let's see here. So you can see here with the LDL, the percentage by weight is almost half. About chylomicrons, it's about 2%. VLDLs are 5 to 10 compared to 40 to 50, and the LDLs are still half of that. So what do I actually want you to know? Well, I actually want you to know the origins of these five columns. I want you to know what the terminology means and why they're relatively high density or relatively low density. Okay, why are they different densities? And it has to do with the proportion of fat to protein. Fat to protein. I do not want you to memorize any of the apoproteins, any of the percentages. Don't worry about it. Recall the origins and the physiological role of each of the plasma lipoproteins. Dietary, good cholesterol, intermediate use of carrying fats all around. You got that? Does it make sense? Any questions? All right, let's go ahead, shall we? Now, what happens to these receptors? What happens to them? Okay. Now, there we go. This is a liver cell. And it has to do with the fact that the average human being makes about 600 milligrams of cholesterol a day. If you didn't eat one whit of cholesterol, you would still be making about 600 milligrams a day, primarily for membrane integrity, because cholesterol is a part of the membrane, phospholipid membrane, and also for bile salts to help digest what fat you do eat. So cholesterol is made, it needs to be regulated to some degree in order to have, if you're eating lots of cholesterol, that your body doesn't continue to make excess amounts. So what happens is you've got this LDL particle that comes in and binds then to a receptor on the liver cell. That receptor, once enough of the lipoproteins bind to that receptor, trigger the formation of endocytosis. That is where a clathrin-coated pit gets made and then pinched off, and you have this clathrin-coated vesicle. Once a vesicle is formed completely and enters into the interior of the cell, it gets acidified by pumps that exist there, which released the Catherine triskelions and create a situation where the receptors get recycled back to the surface, and you end up then have this endosome, which is a low pH system that combines with the lysosome to make a secondary lysosome. Now, that lysosome, of course, is the recycling garage or recycling area for the cell. It's designed to break down everything that gets into it. And so it does that very well here. It breaks down the fatty acids and the amino acids that come from the apoprotein. Then what you have, finally, you have this cholesterol. And that cholesterol then is created in the cholesterol ester droplet that moves into the endoplasmic reticulum to be reformed and eventually become part of the either bile salts or into the plasma membrane. So high levels of cholesterol increase the ACAT synthesis. ACAT, if I recall, is called acyl-CoA cholesterol acyltransferase. And so it transfers a fatty acid to the cholesterol molecule to make a cholesterol molecule that's got a long chain fatty acid attached to it. Woohoo! To an ester bond. And so that creates this cholesterol ester that then in turn goes on to have fates in the endoplasmic reticulum. But its presence in the endoplasmic reticulum reduces something called HMG-CoA reductase synthesis and also reduces LDL receptor synthesis. So high levels of cholesterol ester within the cell reduce the amount of receptors that are made and thus reduce the amount of LDL that's brought into the cell. So that's how there's that kind of feedback inhibition of cholesterol versus its synthesis. Now, there is a nice caption to this diagram that's in your text. Please read that caption, ladies and gentlemen. Please read that caption for greater depth. But I gave you just a little bit of a hint. So let's take a look at what's listed down here. There are three lines you have to fill in. The first one is called feedback. Please put that in. The next is endocytosis. And the end is HDL. The last one is. So long-term feedback control by the amount of enzyme in the cell. Anybody recognize HMG-CoA reductase? Anybody recognize that? You actually had that in a pathway that we're going to see. Okay? HMG-CoA reductase. All right, and so that's less synthesized. All right, so the LDL endocytosis influences the amount of cholesterol in the cell, increases it, so it shuts down the amount of receptor. HDL is responsible for return of cholesterol to the liver, so it's not only LDLs, but HDLs also get brought in here. Surplus cholesterol is disposed of by release of bile acids. Cholesterol is not metabolized to carbon dioxide and water by any mechanism in humans. All right, let's go ahead, shall we, ladies and gentlemen? There are five, looks like, blanks right in here. Let's go ahead and fill those in. The first blank is Knop or Knoop. I've not heard his name pronounced by anybody who really knows how to pronounce it. So it's Knoop. The next is benzene ring. The next is odd chain fatty acids. And the next is even chain fatty acids. So you got Knoop, benzene, odd chain, even chain, and in red there's two C units, and this was confirmed in the 1950s. I have no idea what happened to that. That's interesting. Maybe that's a hint to shut her down. Not yet. So how in the world? So have you got all this written down? Okay, well, let's then talk about it. The title of this slide is fatty acid oxidation. How did they discover that fatty acid oxidation occurred in breakdown of two carbon units at a time? Well, this guy worked on dogs. He fed dogs labeled fatty acids. So he synthesized fatty acids. He put a benzene ring on the end of it. on the hydrocarbon end, not the fatty acid end. Then he fed these fatty acids to these dogs and then collected their urine. Woohoo! Yes! And then he analyzed the urine looking for these benzene rings. Can you imagine? This is in 1904. How would you find a benzene ring in a bunch of urine? What's nice is some poor schmuck grad student did all the heavy lifting with dealing with running around trying to make sure the dog pees into the can and then tries to collect the fatty acids from it. Ah, well, never mind. At any rate, after much work, his team discovered that odd-chain fatty acids produced hippouric acid, whereas even-chain fatty acids produced this phenylacetyluric acid. And so, based on that, he believed that the breakdown was based on two carbon units. Not a one carbon unit, not a three carbon unit, not a five carbon unit, but two carbon units. And this was confirmed in the 1950s because of radio labeled the fatty acids, were able to do that by confirmation. So, this first piece here discusses the history of how fatty acid oxidation was discovered to be broken down as two units at a time. This next section called fatty acid oxidation is, okay, so the cholesterol has drifted by a lipase that's in your muscle tissue or fat tissue. The lipase acts on that fatty triacylglycerols in the chylomicron, releases fatty acids in the interstitial fluid around the cells. The cells transport the fatty acid into the cell. Now what do you do with it? And that's the question. That's what happens next. Now what do you do with it? Well, what you do with it is initially you give it, you activate it. You give it a high energy bond. And so you take a fatty acid and you combine it with ATP to make this acyladenylate anhydride. You release pyrophosphate, which drives the reaction forward by hydrolyzing it into two inorganic phosphates by acting on that inorganic pyrophosphatase. So the free energy of the hydrolysis of PPI helps drive that reaction forward. So you have this high energy intermediate that combines with a CoA group that's sitting in the cytosol, and you then get your final acyl-CoA group. So the acyl-CoA group now basically is, you got a fatty acid that's got a handle on it. And now the body can manipulate it pretty easily, plus the free fatty acid is now occupied as a thioester bond and no longer can alter the pH of the cell, which is an important aspect. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you on Friday and finish this up.
Every time our eyes meet, this feeling inside me is almost more than I can take. Baby, when you touch me, I can feel how much you love me, and it just blows me away. I've never been this close to anyone or anything. I can hear your thoughts, I can see your dreams. I don't know how you do what you do. I'm so in love with you. It just keeps getting better. I want to spend the rest of my life with you by dark. Your hair all around me, baby, you surround me. You touch every place in my heart. Oh, it feels like the first time, every time. You by my